Session number 10398, Reel 9.
This is Pomeroy, Reel 9.
At that moment, we thought we were safe. So we were able to spend another night in the forest by ourselves. And the next morning, we had not eaten anything. We were very hungry. But what can we do? All we can do is drink from the creek. So we walked and walked and walked. And all of a sudden, we saw the footprints of shoes, you know, big shoes. And we thought, my God, this is the footprints of soldiers, of army soldiers. We must get away from this place right away. And at the very moment I said that, there was shooting, you know, shooting at us. And there was a hill, you know. We decided to climb the hill. Now, my four companions are peasants, and they are very agile, very, you know, they are very skillful in climbing, climbing a ridge like that. But I would climb, and then I would fall down, be at the bottom again. I will climb a second time and fall. And they were shooting at us, you know. And I thought they'd get me this time because I'm so slow and I'm so clumsy. And they kept shooting at us. They are probably very poor shots because they never got me. My other companions, they were gone. They had disappeared on that ridge, you know, going up the hill. I fell down four times. Why did they not get me? I went up and then fell down, went up and fell again because, you know, it's not only steep, but it's very slippery, the side of the hill. But in the fourth time, I got behind a big oak tree. My God, that big oak tree really saved me. The fact the oak tree is like this, and at the other end, it's hollow. I could put my whole body into that oak tree. I could feel the hammering of bullets never hit me. And I never left that spot anymore. Now, the thing is this. The soldiers are also afraid of us. They know that our military people, our combat troops are also very skilled in shooting, and you may walk into a trap. They could walk into a trap, and then all of a sudden there will be a burst of fire and they'd be killed. So they did not dare climb that hill because they did not know how many people we were, you see. So I was safe there for all that night. Nobody climbed the hill. And this is the most nightmarish experience I've ever had, because I'm in a place where I'm alone. And I don't know the terrain. I don't know anything about this whole place, where I must go. I have no map. I have no compass.
Is this in Laguna province?
No. This is in central Luzon, in the mountains of Papaya, near the Cordillera Mountains. No? We had already gone. I haven't told you the story yet of how we were in the south and we went to the north. We went to the northern part of Luzon, because we skipped that. And we were in the Papaya Mountains. And I was there, you know. I didn't know what to do. I was just frightened and hungry and tired. And it began to get dark. And so I thought, my God, what do I do now? So I thought, I just must sleep, and after I wake up, I'm going to walk towards the river, because near the river, I might come upon comrades, because we always stick to the river so we can drink when we need to drink. You know, when you want to wash your hands, want to wash up, you know, you need the river. The next morning, when I woke up, I found I could not even walk. I was so paralyzed by fear, perhaps, and by fatigue, by fear. When I walk, I would hold on to the branches of a tree or hold on to a bush. My legs were paralyzed. And then I got to the side of a hill and was sliding down the hill towards the river. I could see the river. When I was sliding down the hill, at the bottom of the hill is a man with his gun pointed towards me. He was an army soldier. And so I put up my hands right away because he might shoot me. So I came down. He says, come here, come here, he said. And I came down. And then he searched me. I was wearing trousers. He searched me. And in my pocket, he found a note. You know, during the time when I was feeling lonely, I wrote out the poem that Bill wrote for me. I memorized this poem. And I had nothing to do. I had a small pencil. I wrote out this poem. I cannot remember the poem anymore, but it was a very beautiful poem. And this man got this. He got this. What is this? He says. I said, that's a poem written by my husband. Who is your husband? He said, his name is William Pomeroy. Oh, William Pomeroy, we just captured him. He said, oh, you mean he's alive? I said, yes, yes, he's there in Camp Murphy now. Oh, my God, I'm so happy. Even if I know he was captured, but I know he's alive. That was very important for me. So he says, you're the wife of William Pomeroy. What's your name? And so I told him. He asked me a lot of questions. Then where are your companions? He said, oh, they disappeared. I don't know where they are. We were only five, I said. So he said, he was a surgeon. I've got to tell Captain Ventura about you. What's your attainment? Said. I said, I'm a graduate of the University of the Philippines with a degree of Bachelor of Science in Education. You're a big shot, hey? Said to me. So he has already asked the Captain Ventura to come. And Captain Ventura is the head of their team, of the BCT, Battalion Combat Team. When Captain Ventura came, he asked me a lot of questions. You know, who am I? Who are my companions? Why am I there? What am I doing there? You know, all these sort of things. I answered him. You know, this is one good thing when you are a graduate from the University of the Philippines, because it's like it's like being a graduate of Eton College or Cambridge University or Oxford University. In the Philippines, they have a tremendous respect for one who graduates from the University of the Philippines. Because all the time, you look at the record of all the top officials in the government and all the well-known celebrities in the Philippines, they are graduates of the University of the Philippines. That was in my favor. None of these men ever tried to fool around with me. Because if you are only a peasant woman, they'll immediately rape you. And it's a good thing they asked me what is my attainment, because when they found out I'm a member, I'm graduated from the University of the Philippines, they did not touch me.
They could probably guess from your speech.
Probably, from my behavior, that I'm not just a peasant woman who's frightened, you know, and wouldn't know. I could face them, you know, without fear. I wasn't afraid to talk with them and answer their questions. And when Captain Ventura saw me, you know, the first question asked me, when were you married to William Pomeroy? I said, May 28, 1948. Where? I said, we were married in the municipality of Makati. You know, he called one of his henchmen and said, you check from Makati municipality if William and Celia Pomeroy has a marriage certificate there. Immediately, that's what they did. Do you know why? Because when we will be headlined in the newspapers, they will determine whether to say common law wife of Pomeroy or wife of Pomeroy was captured. See, that was in the headlines of the newspapers. To them, we are big cheese, you know, that they captured us. This Captain Ventura was also promoted, like the one who captured Bill, because we are supposed to be good cats. We are big fishes as far as they're concerned. So when it was checked that my story is correct, then what the papers carried the next day is Pomeroy's wife captured. That's the headlines of the newspapers. Then they told the details. Well, at first I was so frightened, because I thought, I've heard of stories of our women being raped. But they did not touch me. And in fact, when I said to the soldiers, I'm so hungry, All of them came with their canteens, that call it, with their food.
Containers.
Yes. And they were all, four of them offering to give me their food. And at first I thought I'm very hungry. I began to eat very fast, you know. But after I've eaten a little bit, I realized my situation. And I lost my appetite, you know. I didn't even finish the food they gave me. Then when I saw Captain Ventura and I could see he's a gentleman, I lost all my fears. And the soldiers also were very kind to me. And this is a reaction, or this is a behavior I never expected. I thought that when I fall into the hands of these people, they will massacre me, they will probably mug me or rape me. I'm so surprised at the behavior of these people. They were so respectful and kind to me. Even Captain Ventura was a very nice man. And that night, I slept in a tent with Captain Ventura, but he slept away from me. You know? And he told me, I said to him, should I get up at night to, you know, to urinate? Is it all right for me to walk a little way out? It's all right, he said, but there are guards all around, and you must make yourself conspicuous. And when you're accosted, you answer that you're Celia Pomeroy. But don't go too far, says. Don't go beyond where the guard is. And I felt very safe with this man. He was kind, he was very thoughtful. Then I was taken to Camp Murphy. And luckily, you know, when I got to Camp Murphy, the first officer I met is one who has been my classmate in secondary school. We were in a class, you know, which is a special class, because we are the brightest in the whole school. We are put into a class where we, instead of taking the secondary school for 4 years, we were to take secondary school for 3 years. We were in the same class. It's a special class. And this man, I did not recognize him because he has changed. He's more mature. Before he was very slim. Now he's fat, you know. And when he came to me, he said, don't you remember me? I said, I'm sorry, but who are you? You remember Manuel Flores? I said, are you Manuel Flores? His name is familiar. My God, I said, you've changed. He said, you have changed too. And so we conversed as though we were old friends, you know, we rehearsed the past and what happened to both of us, you know. He became a military man. I became a guerrilla. And he said, for all the, during those years, he said, I never thought that you would do a thing like this, Celia. I never thought you would become a guerrilla. He says, you never really can tell about people. He says, I never thought you'd become a military man. I said, and we are on opposite sides of the fence. I said, no, we are not on opposite sides of the fence. He says, we both love our country, don't we? Yes, you love our country in a different way that I love our country. We had a debate. It was very nice. And I was served good food for the first time in years when we have only rice and fish or rice and salt. Here are the food that I have always, you know, Filipino cuisine, which is so dear to Filipino. My God, I tell you how I ate. And I felt safe in that camp because they were all very nice to me. Then I was told that I can take a bath. I have not had a bath for weeks. And I was brought into a van, you know, a van. And I was all alone in this van, but there are soldiers going around this van. It's in the middle of the, still in the middle of the forest. And then I was allowed to take a bath, and there were clothes for me. Soap, towel, clothes. But the clothes did not fit me. So I told the soldier who was guarding me, I said, these clothes do not fit me. How can I wear them? They are too big. And I was very thin, you know. I was like a living skeleton at that time. And then a lieutenant came and he said, are you willing to wear army clothes? I said, anything as long as it fits me. all right, I'll give you one of mine. He gave me his shirt, he gave me his trousers, he gave me his shoes, and his shoes are so big. And so those were the clothes I wear. Then the next morning, early in the morning, I was told that I'm going to see Colonel Duque. And Colonel Duque is the chief of staff of the Philippine Army. He's the top head. I said, why do I have to see him? He said, he wants to see you. So, unluckily, you know, my period came at that moment when I was about to see this Colonel Duque. Oh, I mean, at least about an hour before I would see him. So I told the soldier again, you know, I said, I need what you call sanitary napkin and sanitary belt because I have my period. I said, what is a period? So I had to explain to him. And you know what he brought me? He brought me Kleenex. You know this?
Tissues.
Yes, these tissues. I said, no, that's not what I need. So I had to draw for him what a sanitary belt is and what is a sanitary napkin. You have to get this from the town, I said. Oh, I think some of the women here have that, because there are also women working there as clerks and so forth. So they got it for me before I could see Colonel Duque. And they were hurrying me. Said, Colonel Duque is waiting for you. What are you doing there, Mrs. Pomeroy? Just a moment, because I had to put this thing on. And then I had to meet Colonel Duque, and he was very kind. He shook my hand and said, how are you? Did you suffer? Oh, he was so nice, you know. I never thought I would have this experience. I thought these people will persecute me and insult me and all this sort of thing.
So you didn't come across hatred against you from the
No, not at all. All these officers were kind and polite to me. But later, at that time, I didn't understand, you know. But later on, when things got going, I began to understand why they were so kind to me. You know why? Because they are thinking of making me collaborate with them. See?
How did they want you to collaborate?
By telling them everything about the movement, who are the top, where are they, and what do they do, what are the plans of the HMB, you know, everything.
Could you have given them this information? Did you have?
Well, you know, you have to use your head when you are being interrogated. You can answer questions which you think they already know. From the situation, from the way they act, or even the way they question you, you can tell when you can lie and when you have to tell the truth. I was interrogated for a long time. You know, you have some things you have to admit because you know that they know already.
And but do you think they caught you out?
No. They did not caught me out because they did not know. I was already a member of the Politburo at that time, you see. They did not know that. They thought I was a member of the Central Committee. See, but since they did not know, I didn't tell them.
When they realized that you weren't telling them anything that they didn't already know, did they then start to try to use violence against you?
No, they did not. What we discovered later on, Bill and I discovered, that when they catch what they think is an intellectual, they do not use any force or violence against that person. But if they catch a peasant, they torture him and they really persecute him. It's a different manner of dealing with us, and also to divide us. Because if the peasant found out that we were treated well and they were not, they become antagonistic towards us, you see. It's splitting tactics. And there are two kinds of officers who will approach you. One is very fierce and very ruthless and insulting. The other one is very kind and very respectful and courteous. You know, these two officers will deal with you.
And what effect does that have on you when you're dealt with by the
Well, at first I didn't know about these tactics until later on when I stayed in army camps. The thing is, I just thought, I will behave like a human being. I'll be nice and polite to them. If they ask me questions, I'll answer the questions, but I'll just be a poker face, you know. You just answer questions. You're polite. You, when they come into my cell, I just say, good morning, Captain. And so, and that's the best tactics. Because I found out that those comrades who show themselves to be so militant, they were tortured.
Militant in what way?
For instance, they insult these officers and say, you have killed our people, and now you are going to kill us, or something like that. You know, when you become
defiant
or insulting, they retaliate by torturing you and subjecting you to all kinds of violence. But if you are passive, you have a poker face, you know, you just answer questions and you are even tempered, you know, they'll not hurt you. So to some degree, there is democracy in the army at that time. No? They are not fascists. In fact, I came to like some of the officers because they are so nice.
So, do you think they got any useful information out of you?
I don't know, but all I did is this is the tactics I use. If I think that they already know, because you can tell, they already know about the things they ask you, I'll tell the truth. But if they don't know, I don't tell them. You have to. You cannot be always telling lies because you'll be found out, and they will really, they'll get tough on you.
While you were in the mountains before you were captured, had you been trained to deal with interrogation?
No, we were not trained. All we were trained is that what we learned, we discussed and decided on. If you are caught with the goods, meaning documents, you admit that you're a communist. But if you were walking somewhere and you do not have any documents, anything to identify you, deny that you're a communist so that you can get away, you know. And then we have already decided, if you are caught and you are in the hands of the enemy, you are considered out of the Communist Party. Because we don't know how you will behave in the hands of the enemy. So in the meantime, you consider yourself as no longer a member of the Communist Party. Later on, you can be admitted again after it has been found that your behavior has been correct and acceptable. See, that's the rule. I was caught with the goods. What was I doing in the mountains, catching butterflies? And then they went into our camp and got all the materials that we were working on. I was working on a paper called State and Revolution. I've already finished a paper about the Communist Party, its principles and methods. That was my assignment. That's all finished. It's there in the camp. And I was already working on a paper about State and Revolution. They caught this. So what can you... And Bill also... his passport was caught in the camp, you know, all these things. So you cannot deny. Since I cannot deny, when I faced them, I defended myself about, it's good, you know. You know, because they said to me, all right, you write a paper saying why you became a communist. My God says, this is the very thing I want them to ask me, because I can make propaganda. As to how I became a communist. And all those officers who read what I wrote as to how I became a communist were so impressed. This is modesty aside. Were so impressed by how I became a communist, because I put all the, you know, the ability I have to write in that document. Because I want to recruit them too. I want them to become sympathetic towards us, you see.
But did they ask you to sign a statement to say that you had recanted your political
beliefs? No. They don't know that rule. In fact, I'm always saying I'm still a communist.
So you...
No, what they did is they wanted to get my handwriting and said, write something on this paper. I said, what shall I write? Anything you want. So I put there, workers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. That's Karl Marx's quotation from Karl Marx.
So you were brought to trial in which year?
That was 1952. and it was my birthday. Do you know when we were tried and sentenced? We were sentenced to life imprisonment. It was my birthday.
What was your trial like? How was it conducted?
It was rather fair. We were allowed to speak, and we were... it's an ordinary court trial. But the trouble is, our lawyer is also a classmate of mine in the secondary school, this special class we had. He was chosen. We were not the ones who chose him. The court chose him to defend us. And here comes Crispin Bisons, who is a good friend of mine in high school. I still remembered him. And so he said to me, when he saw me, "My God, Celia, you are really a remarkable person." I said, "Are you saying that? I thought you are not a communist." "Oh," he says, "don't think I'm so naive," he says. "I know what communism is," he says. And he was the one who gave us really legal advice. Because he said to us, "It's better for you at this time when things are very bad for you and for your woman to plead guilty. Guilty to rebellion, you see? Because if you plead not guilty, you will get the death sentence. But if you plead not guilty, you will only get a life sentence."
And if you plead guilty, you will get the life sentence.
Yes. "If you plead guilty, you will get a life sentence," he told Bill and me. "If you plead not guilty, you will get the death sentence. And you never can tell when they will execute this. It is better," he said, "to be live revolutionaries than to be dead heroes." I remember that very well, he said. "So you decide for yourself. I think you should plead guilty," he said.
When you got the sentence of life imprisonment, did you really think that you would be in for life?
No. We didn't think so. We were always optimistic. We always saw that there will be ways and means by which we can avoid the life sentence.
How long did you serve?
We served 10 years. Do you know why it is as short as that? For us, that's short. Because in prison, we had arguments with our general secretary about this business of being in prison. Bill and I proposed to him that we should start a campaign for the release of prisoners to be organized by our relatives. Our relatives get together and then they start a campaign, ask